Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Perry Carpenter, the Chief Evangelist and Strategy Officer for KnowBefore. Good morning, Perry. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us this early on this Monday morning. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah. So I came up as a IT developer. So I started out as a programmer, did what a lot of people do, where you do really good and you kind of get promoted to your point of incompetence and you decide to try something else. So after being a programmer for a while, I went off into analytics and ran a team of statisticians over at Sam's Club, because I was a programmer at Walmart. And then ended up getting the, wanting to go back into security again. So I went over to Altel before they were bought by Verizon, ran a lot of their enterprise strategy services for security, went over to Gartner, where I ran a number of research areas around identity and access management, data leak prevention, some CISO training services and mentoring services, and then ultimately made the leap into the vendor world, where I work in the security awareness space now, kind of crafting a lot of the strategy for the way that KnowBefore tackles the market and the way that we try to serve the customer base that we have.
Very interesting. So I have to ask you, since you started out as a programmer, as did I, what was your first programming language that you worked in professionally?
Mine was C++.
I was assembler, then COBOL.
You did assembler professionally, not just as an academic type of thing. Wow.
I did. Yeah. I was actually an MVS internals guy.
Wow. Now I had to decode COBOL and JCL and a lot of languages that were considered kind of on the way out when I was starting to program, had to decode those and do a lot of work around those around Y2K.
Yes, I remember those days. And some of the, it's COBOL and that it's still out there. There was a
still
big
out there, COBOL and Fortran and JCL and all the stuff that people have been saying is going away forever, still there.
It still runs. So now you're at KnowBefore. So why don't you tell us what KnowBefore does? Who's your typical client? What you do for them? All those things.
So KnowBefore is technically in the security awareness space. So security awareness is all around training end users, primarily how to interact with the computing environment and their physical environment in a way that is safe. So a way that mitigates the inherent risk that comes with that. So the easy way to think about that would be it's the training that says, don't click on this, or here's how to evaluate an email, but it's so much more than that. But it comes down for me to the behavior science behind it, because I actually wrote a book a few years ago called Transformational Security Awareness, What Neuroscientists, Storytellers, and Marketers Can Teach Us About Driving Secure Behaviors. It's a long title, but what it gets down to is that when a lot of people say security awareness, I think that there's too much bound up in those two words. We understand the security piece, but when we say awareness, what we typically think is that knowledge solves everything. And I think every parent or every teacher knows that we can try to give people knowledge all day long, and they can even pass a test on it or nod their head and say that they know it, but it doesn't always translate into behavior. And so the thing that I try to do, and the thing that we're trying to build into the product suite at KnowBefore, is things that will channel the right behavior or train for the right behavior. And so there's a slightly different science that comes with that than just traditional learning.
It's very interesting, because I've worked at a number of companies that do security awareness training internally, but I never thought of it. It's more what you're talking about, the awareness, not the behavior.
Right.
So do you believe that it truly is, it's both, or is it more the behavior part of it?
Well, so what I think about is, and this is the kind of the central thesis of the book, is I believe that security awareness, quote unquote, has a logical fallacy in it. It suffers from what I call the knowledge intention behavior gap. So just because we know something doesn't mean that we'll naturally intend to act on that. Mm-hmm. And even when we intend to act on something, we don't always do it. Ask anybody that's already kind of messed up their New Year's resolution list already. Mm-hmm. So I can have all the knowledge that says I need to eat better, I need to lose weight, I need to save more money, I need to spend more quality time with family. I know all of these things, and we write those down every year. So we know those, we even intend to do it, we commit to do it. And then in the moment, we make these little trade-offs over and over and over again, and we're back to the old behavior pattern. And that's just the way our minds work. There's a lot of, you know, cognitive science behind why we fall into those ruts. And so out of that knowledge, intention, behavior gap flow three realities that I tell people to grapple with. Number one is, just because I'm aware doesn't mean that I care. Number two is, if we try to work against human nature, we will fail. And number three is, what an employee does is way more important than what they know. Because from a security perspective, I can know all the right things and still allow something bad to happen because mm-hmm. of these knee-jerk reactions that we have. Or I could not know anything that you want me to know at all, and I still might behave in the right way. And so sure. What I want to do is, yes, that knowledge is important and that should be a component, but I'm going to try to channel the action as the primary thing, and then back that up with the knowledge as much as possible.
That's rather interesting, because it always amazed me, because I've been in IT, you know, for many years now, and the number of IT people that should know better and then they still make mistakes. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it is one of these things where the IT people and the people that know the most are sometimes the worst offenders, which is bad because they do know better. And we actually, we're really guilty of judging people for doing the very same things that we do. Because I could look at so many security people, myself included, and a lot of the things that we preach, we put off doing ourselves. We'll say all the time, you know, to people, you need to have good password hygiene. You need to not share passwords, or you need to not reuse passwords, or you should always use multi-factor authentication. But in the moment, we ourselves make a lot of those little trade-offs, and we think it's a safe risk to take at the time. Oh, I know better. I'll go change that later. I'll fix it later. And most people never do. So we make the same mistakes.
This is true. And then, so it's interesting because of what you do. Cybercrime was on the rise before COVID.
Yeah.
Right. Would you, I think everybody would agree with that. But I think it's like because of COVID, because of everybody working from home, did you notice some, like, did your business increase as a result of COVID?
Yeah, our all the indicators increased. So we did well. And I hate to say it that flatly, but during COVID, there was a spike in a lot of the social engineering things, you know, phishing emails or cold calls, all trying to get people to click on emails, download malware to their machine, or click on something that would cause ransomware to go through their organization, all those kind of things. And the way that the vector that a lot of cyber criminals used was to play the COVID card in that. So they'd send a phishing email that said, hey, here's news about COVID. Here's, you know, the newest thing, or here's something about the vaccine, or here's something good or bad that you might agree with politically as it relates to COVID. And so always stirring the emotion, always stirring the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But for the, you know, purposes of those, you know, cyber criminal gangs. And so as organizations were grappling with how to help their employees prepare for that or deal with that and protect their work environments and their home environments, naturally that was something where they would look to us to help with. And we saw, and you know, Google and others mentioned this as well, but there were several thousand fold increases in phishing in general, but specifically with COVID related phishing templates and the lures that were out there. So there's definitely a lot of that.
Interesting. And because people, you know, it's easier to secure a work network, obviously, right, than a home network. So did you find that a lot of companies, they had to have two worries? One was the employee's laptop is at home. Mm-hmm. It's vulnerable. But then, because it's vulnerable, now the internal network is also vulnerable, right? So was there a lot of training on that too, that from the people that were securing the internal network?
Yeah, so I mean, from our perspective, our company covers tons of different training elements, so people could choose that for sure. But the thing that's more interesting for me than just those things that can come to mind pretty immediately, which is, you know, the mix of work and home equipment, is the mix of other areas that come up between work and home. So all of a sudden now, let's say I've got my, let's say I'm sitting home and I've got a makeshift office environment and my laptop is on my kitchen counter most of the time. Well, now everybody in my family can hear all these work conversations. And what if I'm in the middle of a merger or an acquisition? What if I'm talking, you know, intellectual property? Oh, and what if there's a smart assistant there, like an Alexa device or a Google Home? And now all of a sudden there's a microphone that's picking up all of that that would normally be excluded from these environments. Or what if I've got a whiteboard that I put behind me now that has internal information on it, and everybody in my house or everybody that comes to visit can see that? Mm-hmm. Or my kids are doing virtual school and my whiteboard's in the background, and now potentially that's in the shot of, you know, 30, 40 kids. So all of these other ways that this, you know, the weird dynamics of trying to keep things segmented, which is what you're getting to when you talk about a public, or when you talk about a corporate network, you have segmentation and you have a perimeter. All of that just dissolves away completely. And it's not always the computing environment that it dissolves away in only, it's the everything else as well. And we typically forget about that everything else piece.
Yeah, I mean, I personally never even thought of that. I mean, I do have a background like this. One of the reasons is no one can see what's going on behind me. I mean, even though there's nothing going on behind me right now, but you're right. You never know, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, where do you think this is all going to go? Because, you know, COVID, you know, it goes and it seems to wane, and then it starts up again, and it wanes. And right now we're in the middle of another spike. I mean, it seems like virtual work or working from home is here to stay for a long time. So do you think that what you guys do is going to be a standard part of onboarding an employee in the future?
Yeah, I mean, we have been for a while, because there's, you know, a lot of regulation and things like that that say people need to understand X, Y, and Z related to security knowledge or behavior. And so we've always been one of those have to have types of things. Mm-hmm. But I think you're absolutely right. The things that people will need to know and the way that they need to prepare is going to be different, because work from home is here to stay. We're 2 years into a global pandemic right now, and the biggest of the big companies are having to be way more flexible than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And they're setting the stage for everybody else to follow. You know, you have tons of companies that are saying, all right, I guess we're not going to do this return to office thing that we said we were going to do a year ago. And indefinitely, you guys get to work from home now. And now what we see is that a lot of the physical borders that were up that meant that, you know, hey, I live in Arkansas, but there's not too many people in Arkansas that have traditionally worked from home for companies in other states. But now a lot of those borders and those travel requirements and the requirement to be in the same state or in the same city and go into the office, a lot of that's fading away, because COVID has shown us that, you know, because we had to do it, that we can do it. And now we have this whole, what's, you know, become known as the great resignation of people saying, all right, I'm working from home. COVID maybe has thought, helped me think about my mortality a little bit more or my priorities a little bit more. So I want to do things my way for a while. And organizations, employers around the world are grappling with that. And as a result of that, a lot of people are going to get to work from home for as long as they want and then go into the office only when it's, you know, expedient or necessary to accomplish some specific task. And so that means that we have to flex with that and we have to deal with the threats and we have to understand what the opportunities are.
Yeah. And I think, I agree. I think it's just going to, I think we, you know, people keep talking about the new normal. I think we're there. I think, yeah. Right. You know, the people that have to go into the office now are going in and the people that don't aren't, and I don't think they're going to want to rush back anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, the new normal, we're pretty much there. It's just, you know, in another year from now, maybe people won't have to sanitize and wear masks and things like right. that as much. It's just going to be same thing, but with less, you know, medical precaution along yeah. with it, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. And it's interesting because you live in an area without a lot of traffic. I live in a city with a lot of traffic, and I have to yeah. tell you, it's actually nice. You know, mm-hmm. the interesting thing though is now that as things start to unwind, there's more traffic on the weekend because people are home during the week. Yeah. We're actually seeing traffic jams on the weekend now instead of where it used to be, you know, rush hour.
Wow.
Yeah. But people want to get out, right? That's just yeah. human nature too.
Yep. Yep. Well, and I think there's a lot of pent up demand for getting out right now. Yes. So, you know, for the first, well, again, we're 2 years into this. For the first year, you had a lot of people that were trying to be really, really cautious. And then there was a little bit of a relaxing and then people started to try to do that. And then they had to tighten back up again. And so in these waves of relaxing. And there's a lot of people too, that are just done completely. And yeah. they're like, all right, if I get it, I get it. I'm going to, you know, figure out how to adapt. But I think in these different waves where the relaxation comes or where people just get fed up and go do it, you are seeing those big surges and it's people trying to take advantage of life again, because they've yeah. realized that they've missed out on a lot of things.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, Perry, it's been great talking to you. I assume 2022 is going to be a busy year for Know Before. Yeah. I don't see it slowing down anytime soon.
We got tons of fun things we've already lined up for this year, so we're looking forward to it.
Well, good luck in 2022, and thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.